This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiswu Heap in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The main drivers for local poaching, I would like to think that it's poverty. There are no jobs. People have nothing to tend to.
That's an official in Zimbabwe's Matabeleland North Province on the rise of poaching during the coronavirus pandemic. Details coming up also. Equatorial Guinea and Cameroon agree to solve their border dispute. And the statue of King Leopold II of Belgium has been taken down. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The government of Burundi has announced the death of President Pierre Nkurunziza. The announcement came a short time ago and said Nkurunziza died of cardiac arrest yesterday. Few other details are available. Nkurunziza had been in office for 15 years and was due to step down in the coming weeks. Following elections on May 20th, his favorite candidate, Evariste Ndayishimiye, won election by an overwhelming majority. We will bring you more on this story in the coming days. South Africa's government says it will fight a court ruling that declared its current lockdown regulations unconstitutional. At almost 70 days, the country's COVID-19 lockdown is the longest in the world, and it carries some of the harshest restrictions on basic rights. Critics say the government's emergency rules are draconian and aren't aimed at protecting the health of citizens, Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa's lockdown objective was to slow the spread of coronavirus to allow the health sector to prepare for a full-scale pandemic. Even the scientists on President Cyril Ramaphosa's COVID-19 Advisory Committee say the measure has achieved this. They say it should now be left to citizens to minimize infection, such as by wearing masks and washing hands. Instead, and inexplicably to many, the government continues to enforce widespread restrictions, such as banning interprovincial travel. The High Court ruling says such regulations are irrational and in contravention of the Bill of Rights.
I think it makes a couple of good points about the law, and then it doesn't apply the law that it set out.
That was law professor Kathy Powell, who says the ruling correctly says the government cannot do whatever it wants to curb COVID-19. It can only limit the rights of citizens to the extent allowed by the Constitution during a state of disaster. But Powell believes the judge's decision is flawed because he doesn't detail specific reasons for the lockdown's irrationality.
Generally, he threw everything out on the basis of very clumsy, vague reasoning that seemed to express outrage rather than apply the legal criteria.
Powell says the government should have won the case easily, as all it had to do was show the judge that its lockdown laws had some rational connection with a legitimate state purpose.
One of the problems that the court faced in this case was that the government didn't bother to argue its case very well. It simply said, oh, well, you know, we're trying to curb COVID-19, but it didn't explain how the regulations that were being challenged were meant to achieve that.
The Ramaphosa administration's critics say it's hard to defend illogical regulations, such as the one keeping restaurants closed, on the grounds that such socializing could spread coronavirus. Yet churches, where far more people gather, are open. Cigarette sales remain banned on the grounds that smoking could exacerbate the pandemic. Yet alcohol is for sale, despite the fact that the violence often accompanying its abuse results in hospitals being filled to capacity on weekends. Chief opposition leader, the Democratic Alliance's John Steenhuisen, says many of the government's laws are petty and have little connection to a medical response to COVID-19. His party will soon mount a court challenge of its own to the state's Disaster Management Act, which allowed the lockdown in the first place.
We have seen the executive branch essentially making sweeping regulations and laws relating to clothing, tobacco, alcohol with absolutely no reference to the elected lawmakers of the country. Also, the length of time in which government could keep us in a hard lockdown, it could be 4 weeks, 4 months, or 4 years.
Steenhuisen says the government should manage the pandemic in partnership with citizens by means of reasonable and not ridiculous rules.
Unfortunately, government has failed the test on this when it comes to the regulations. And when you resort to the pettiness of telling adult citizens what they can wear, how they must wear it, what they can drink, when they can exercise, and slapping a military curfew on them, I think you break the compact between government and the people, and that's why we now have the slew.
Until the state's appeal is heard, the world's longest lockdown gets longer. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea have agreed to jointly map out a disputed border area after skirmishes between their troops left several wounded and property destroyed. Officials from the two countries are asking hundreds of traders and farmers who relocated because of the clashes to return to the disputed area, but some are reluctant. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Officials from Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea agreed to work on defining their disputed border after a crisis meeting Monday night. Cameroon's South Region Governor Felix Ngelengele says in the past 2 weeks, there have been several skirmishes along the border with Equatorial Guinea's military. Ngele says while nobody was killed, several troops were wounded and goods were destroyed on both sides of the border. After the meeting Monday, he says Cameroon instructed local officials and traditional rulers to meet with their Equatorial Guinean peers to map out a proposed border.
Nous avons évoqué le problème de la frontière et nous avons convenu que...
Ngele says after local officials agreed on a proposed new border, the central governments in Malabo and Yaoundé will be able to decide if there will be a new demarcation or not. But for the time being, he says people should go about their daily activities peacefully. Farmers and traders last week fled the border town of Kiosi after tensions with troops on both sides. Justo Javier Ndong Engon is governor of Equatorial Guinea's Kietem province on the border with Cameroon. He says at the meeting, the two sides agreed to return troops to their barracks while waiting for the governments to find a lasting solution to the border dispute.
Mon sous-préfet Abidjan, le sous-préfet de Kiosi.
Engon says the crisis meeting resolved that border authorities ask community leaders and chiefs to urge farmers to return to their farms and traders to their shops. He says both sides ordered an end to the destruction of goods and asked that farm produce like maize, cassava, tomatoes, and vegetables, which were stocked at the border, be given access into Equatorial Guinea. Engon did not say how many Equatorial Guineans were affected by the conflict. Cameroon said on its side about 350 farmers and traders had fled the border in the last few weeks, but that many were returning. Cameroonian vegetable seller Derek Sama says despite the assurances that troops have pulled back, he will not return to Kiosi. He spoke via a messaging application from the town of Ebulova, where he relocated.
It is not the first time the military from Equatorial Guinea cross over to destroy our goods or seize vegetable and food from us. Cameroon government tell us every time that they will solve the problem, but no solution seems to be coming.
It's not the first time tensions have erupted along the two countries' border. In August, Equatorial Guinea began to erect a wall along the 183-kilometer border, sparking condemnation from Cameroon. Cameroon said Equatorial Guinea constructed markers on its territory and instructed the military not to tolerate any unlawful intrusion. Equatorial Guinea has also often sealed its border with Cameroon, complaining of security threats posed by illegal immigration. In December 2017, Equatorial Guinea said it had arrested 30 foreign armed men from Chad, the Central African Republic and Sudan on the border who planned to destabilize the government. Cameroon said at the time it also arrested 40 additional heavily armed men but gave no details. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News. Yaoundé.
The UN Refugee Agency reports it is almost bankrupt because of underfunding. It warns it will not be able to assist and protect 1.5 million refugees in the Democratic Republic of Congo and many of the millions of internally displaced from surging violence and COVID-19. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Latest reports put the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 in DRC at more than 4,000, the second largest number in southern Africa. At the same time, the United Nations reports an upsurge in intercommunal violence and natural disasters has uprooted hundreds of thousands of people in the volatile eastern part of the country in the past few months. The UN Refugee Agency calls the situation alarming, but says it is unable to provide life-saving assistance to many of those in desperate need because it has run out of cash. The agency reports only 20% of its $168 million appeal is funded. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh tells VOA the UNHCR is being forced to make difficult decisions about what to cut. As a result, he says many people in dire need are not getting essential aid.
We say we are helping the most vulnerable, but a country which has more than 5 million displaced people, people on the run every day, the consequences could be tragic and heartbreaking. And our colleagues on the ground who are seeing all this unfolding, they're trying to do as much as possible with the limited resources.
Balosh says many of the displaced are not receiving food, water, health care, and proper hygiene. He says many lack shelter and are forced to live out in the open. He says the rapid spread of COVID-19 across the country is magnifying the already complex, deadly threats facing these vulnerable people.
One thing we are trying to do with the local authorities is try to decongest the sites, try to help people build shelters, appropriate shelters, which can accommodate a family and they can do the required social distancing. But currently, many of the displaced are living with host communities in overcrowded sites.
Because of the underfunding, Balosh says UNHCR staff is unable to move the displaced out of these congested sites into accommodations where they could maintain a physical distance and be safe. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A nonprofit organization in Zimbabwe has raised an alarm over an increase in wildlife poaching during the country's COVID-19 lockdown. Reporter Kudzai Zadawashi has the details.
Simiso Mlevu is the media liaison and programs officer for Matabeleland North with the Center for Natural Resource Governance. She says the lockdown to limit the spread of COVID-19 has been damaging for Zimbabwe's wildlife.
Yes, poaching increased during the lockdown. From the data that we have, we are comparing what happened in March and April. This is so because the lockdown started on the 30th of March. In March, 3 elephants were killed, and in April, 4 elephants were killed. A white rhino, there wasn't any that was killed in March, but in April, 2 white rhinos were killed.
She says one buffalo was killed in March and 2 more were killed in April. No lions were killed in March, but 2 were killed in April. As for impalas, 7 were killed in March and 10 more were killed in April. Warthogs were not spared either. 3 were killed in March and 4 more were killed in April. Mlevu says poaching has different causes.
We actually have got different types of poaching. We have syndicates, we have local poachers who are just poaching for subsistence, just for survival. And these are the ones who are poaching kudus, impalas, and all those animals that they then use as relish at home. Syndicates and those who are operating organized crime are actually using weapons like guns.
She adds that the syndicates sometimes poison wildlife drinking points. She says many Zimbabweans who poach often have no other way of earning a living.
The main drivers for local poaching, I would like to think that it's poverty. There are no jobs. People have nothing to tend to. They do not have any sources of livelihood in the rural areas.
Adding to the problem, human conflicts with wildlife are increasing as people move into animal habitats. She says local residents have no incentive to protect the wildlife in their communities because they do not benefit from the wildlife. In the past, she says, the government ensured that revenue from professional hunting groups and wildlife tourism helped develop the local community. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. South Africa's government is fighting a court ruling that declares its current coronavirus lockdown unconstitutional. Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea agree to solve their border dispute. And the UN Refugee Agency reports it is almost bankrupt. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. The statue of Leopold II of Belgium has been taken down. The statue had long been a target of activists because of the king's record of brutal colonial rule in former Central African colonies. The French news agency AFP reports that the Belgian port city of Antwerp took down the statue today, just days after it was vandalized with paint by anti-racism protesters. The anti-racism movement has gained momentum in recent days after the latest U.S. police killing of an unarmed black suspect triggered a global wave of protest. Nigeria's decision to let worship centers to reopen for a maximum of 1 hour each time is drawing mixed reaction. Gifta Gariga from Abuja, Nigeria, tells us more.
We should continue the lockdown on the worship centers because there is no way our people, by our social standards, will observe the due guidelines that would prevent the community spread that will occur in the worship centers.
I'm in support of the gradual reopening of churches because I believe that most churches has well-trained physicians and facility to help combat and prevent the spread.
They have to put up some measures, especially wearing nose masks. Has to be implemented.
Very dangerous because the way we pray, we normally compact ourselves together. So that social distance will be the most so.
Voices of some Christian and Muslim faithful reacting to the ban on worship centers easing. The second phase of easing COVID-19 lockdown restrictions was announced Monday evening by the Presidential Task Force team and approved by President Muhammadu Buhari. The task force's national coordinator, Dr. Sani Aliyu, explained the move, which took effect Tuesday for 4 weeks.
Remember that we've closed places of worship for many weeks now. While some may be able to pray at home, others have very strong need for spiritual guidance and a very strong need to go to a place of worship. So how do we accommodate that? How do we balance those two? Which was why we said, okay.
Ali implored all religious organizations to take responsibility and follow the guidelines. Churches and mosques are only allowed to operate between 5 a.m. and 8 p.m. daily. The chairman of the Christian Association of Nigeria in Imo State, the Reverend Eches Divine Eches, commended the government on the decision.
It's a welcome development. This is coming after much consultations and deliberations with the Task Force on COVID-19 team, with other religious groups, of course.
Etches reiterated that churches are organized and disciplined places and would adhere to the government's rules. Iman Dawood, founder of Islamic Family Foundation Abuja, emphasized the need for training and educating those in charge of the mosque and churches on what they can and can't do.
Sensitizing them on what to look out for, the signs to look out for if anybody is suffering from any form of illness. I think the commonest is the temperature. So if anybody is coming to the mosque and is found to be having cold or catarrh, such a person should not be allowed at the entrance.
Restrictions on places of worship are based on guidelines issued by the Presidential Task Force and protocols agreed upon by state governments. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Some Nigerian tailors and designers have taken their creativity to making fashionable face masks, adding glamour and style to health and safety. When authorities eased lockdowns in the country earlier this month, it made the use of face masks in public places a must. Timothy Obiezu examines how some Nigerians are choosing to wear face masks with flair.
26-year-old Nigerian fashion model Pamela Uchechukwu is taking on the coronavirus pandemic with style, adding personalized face masks that match her clothes. At her home in Abuja, she shows off mask designs.
I try to look different from other people because I feel very happy when I go out. People admire me, people like what I put on. So that's why I try to wear something that will look good on me, that will go with my outfit.
But it is not just fashion models like Pamela who want to look good while taking precautions against COVID-19. A growing number of Nigerians are keeping fashion designers like Ifeoma Anyanwu busy these days. She says she recently got an order to produce up to 100 masks with beautiful designs.
But just because we want to be safe, it doesn't have to be boring. Like we said, this is the new norm. So if it's a new norm, we have to adjust. And the only way to get people to take it seriously is to inculcate it in their everyday lives. You know, we've got bankers, we've got professionals, we've got doctors, we've got entrepreneurs. So how do you want them to go wearing the doctor's mask?
Nigeria, like many countries, mandated the use of face masks in public in early May to help stop the spread of the coronavirus. Designer Oluwaseun Adeojo, who has moved mask production to her home due to the coronavirus, notes that even before the pandemic, face masks were used on occasion in Nigeria's fashion scene.
I don't think it's a new thing. It's been on the fashion show, but people didn't really take it serious. It's just a fashion face mask, not the one that can actually protect you from the virus. So now I think we're embracing it now more than ever before because of the coronavirus, and everybody is looking for a way of protecting themselves and also looking fashionable.
But promoting fashionable face masks at a time like this, when people should be social distancing, has raised criticism. The Nigeria Health Ministry's Public Health Director, Josephine Okechukwu, says her main concern is not how face masks look, but that they're effective.
We know that COVID-19 is a respiratory infection, right? So when we're wearing the face mask, as long as this microorganism, which is the coronavirus, does not pass through the face mask you are wearing to infect you, I think it's safe enough.
Nigerian designers say their reusable fashion masks are not only safe, but also make a statement. And like most fashion, they also help self-confidence, a boost most welcome with the uncertainty of COVID-19. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Bonkbili Abaro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.